It's good to see everybody here this morning. I really enjoyed John's lesson before mine. I don't know that mine will be quite so impactful as his will be, as you'll see in a minute. But first, I'd like to say that here lately, I guess I was thinking about this for the topic of my sermon, but it seems like here lately, I've done a lot of growing personally, and I feel like I have a more complete realization, you know, of things that I need to be doing. The picture, the story of God, His love for us. I don't know, here lately it seems like it's really just been coming more complete in my head. And I have y'all to thank for that. Just, you know, this morning I'd like to thank each and every one of you here for that. I feel like this group is encouraging to do, to be better here. And I've done a lot of growing with this special lady who's here with me this morning because of her, and because of the young people's class that I've been teaching, you know, Forrest and Mylon and Zach. I've really enjoyed that class. And that's kind of where the sermon came from this morning. What really happened to the dinosaurs? We've been going through this book by Ken Ham. He was the general editor of a book called The New Answers Book. And he is a premillennialist, so sometimes you have to take what he says with a grain of salt in that respect. But a lot of the scientific stuff that he's talking about has been really interesting to me, because maybe y'all are in the same boat I am. I'm not as smart as some of you here, so maybe you're smarter than me. But, you know, I've always felt intimidated by the fact of talking to people about evolutionary concepts and things of that nature. And this book really helps people with even a basic Bible knowledge look at it and go, oh, you know, that makes sense. It's just simple ways of, you know, confronting people about it. So this question, we'll look at its importance later. But, you know, we have dinosaurs. When you think of dinosaurs, most of us think of, you know, this picture. Well, okay, maybe not that picture. Is that what you said? I could have gone the whole sermon, nobody would know. This is why I don't use technology. Really appreciate that. I was lost there completely. This is why I don't need technology. But I felt like this particular sermon needed visual aid, especially for what I was talking about. So where I was going, this is what most of us think of when we think of dinosaurs. We think of big, giant, mean, scary things. You see, you know, their bones in the Smithsonian, and you know, we think of Jurassic Park. It's fun because it's monster movies. You know, they're big and scary. Of course, they eat people. You know, they're fun. They're monster movies, just like we like Frankenstein. So. So they'll tell you what evolutionists will say is that dinosaurs first evolved from amphibians about 235 million years ago. Okay? This is what they'll tell you. We're going to compare what creationists think versus what evolutionists think. They'll also tell you that no human ever lived with a dinosaur. The two were separated by, you know, millions of years, that no man ever lived with dinosaurs. And they'll also tell you that they died out 65 million years ago from most likely some catastrophic event. I think in public school a lot of times they'll teach that it was a big meteor, an asteroid that hit the Earth, changed the environment, and then dinosaurs could no longer live in that environment. So what does the Bible say about it? Well, the first thing you need to know is that the word dinosaur isn't in the Bible. Okay, that word wasn't invented until 1841. The King James Version, most of us have some iteration of that. I think some also have the New American Standard. But that was translated in 1611, the King James Version. So it stands to reason that that word was invented in 1841, we're not going to see that word in our Bibles. Bible was written before it. Even before the King James Version, it was written before this word. All land animals, you know, they're created on day six, about 6,000 years ago. We're going to look at that time frame here in a few minutes. But they were created by God on day six. And they did indeed live alongside man. This is what the Bible teaches. So they'll use the phrase, you know, well, dinosaurs ruled the earth. You might see History or Discovery Channel, whatever, you know, school, Shark Week, all that stuff, you see it in HD. It's fun to look like monster movies, like we were talking about. And what do they mean when they say rule the earth? What do evolutionists mean when they say rule the earth? Well, they mean that the dinosaurs were the biggest, baddest creature on the block. There was nothing that could stand up to them, nothing to keep them in check. You know, and they roamed around, did whatever they wanted to, and they ate everything. You know, that's what you're thinking of. But in reality, the Bible teaches something very different. Let's look at Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. In verse 29. And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food. Also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Notice here, God only authorized green things, herbs, to all the living creatures, man and animal alike. He only authorized them to be eating green things here in Genesis chapter 1. That's the only thing that they could eat. Let's flip over to Romans chapter 5. We'll complete our thought here. Romans chapter 5, verse 12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because of all sin. And he goes on here. But the idea is that there was no death of any kind in the world before man sinned. Nothing died. No animals, no men. There was no death. Death was not in the world before man sinned. So that's kind of a funny picture in your head. We'll go back to this picture right here. You think of this thing with its teeth. You know, and maybe it didn't look quite like this before the curse in the garden. But this guy right here would have been eating plants. You know, before death came in the world. That's not really what you see in the monster movies. So nothing died before man's sin. You know, they didn't rule the earth, man was alongside with them. They'll teach you that something catastrophic happened. That, you know, they died out before man came along. Well, how is that possible? Nothing died before man came along. Let's look at Genesis chapter 6 as well. Mm-hmm. Genesis chapter 6, verse 19 again. And of every living thing, of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark, to keep them alive. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, of animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come with you, will come to you to keep them alive. So this word kind here, you know, we see that all kinds of, you know, everything, creatures were on the ark with Noah. This word kind is a Hebrew word called bearmin, I'm not sure how exactly you say it. And creation scientists say that this is the genetic pool that everything came from after that. So all the animals that we see today all came from, it wouldn't be two tigers or two lions, for instance. It would be a male and a female cat of any kind. It's just a term. And then those two cats provided all the genetic information that through breeding we have all the cats that we have today. That's what we're talking about when we use this word kind. And that includes reptiles, birds, and animals and mammals. Okay? They were there with Noah on the ark. This is what the Bible teaches. They lived alongside man. And they survived this catastrophic event, at least for a while. You know, the flood didn't wipe out every time. So where did they come from? Again, we talked about what evolutionists will say. They'll say that they evolved from amphibians millions of years ago. Here we see just a picture I found of kind of an evolution through dinosaurs, and then now they'll tell you that they also evolved into birds. So the dinosaurs, you know, they have their little beaks and things. They evolved into birds. You see the progression, they say. The only problem with this theory is that there are no in-between forms from dinosaur to birds. You know, in the fossil record, there are no feathered dinosaurs. And, you know, God, we already read this. No, wait, we didn't read this one. Genesis chapter 1. God made them on day 6. Look at Genesis chapter 1, beginning in verse 24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So they created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So we see here, day 6, we see dinosaurs are lumped in with all these living creatures on day 6. Not the aquatic life, but with all these creeping things. I mean, those would include dinosaurs. And notice that they're created on the same day as man. You know, and we're told evening and morning was the first day. This is a 24-hour period. So when did the dinosaurs really live? You know, this is the 65-million-year question, right? This is what we're talking about. This is where people get so tied up with it. Well, we already looked here just a second ago that they were created on day 6. And I had mentioned that they were created 6,000 years ago earlier. So how do we get that timeline? You know, how do we get this 6,000 year timeline? Well, we get this, and I believe Ryan did a class on this. I don't remember how long ago it was, but he showed us a way where you can go through and add up the years of the lives of the people in the lineage. And when you do that, you come up with a number from Adam to Jesus of about, I guess, 4,000 years, and then we know we've had recorded history for the rest of it. And for your own information, these lineages, you can find in Genesis chapter 5, chapter 11, and then also in Matthew chapter 1 and Luke as well. So this is what the Bible teaches. This is what's true. The dinosaurs lived, you know, they were created at the same time as man about 6,000 years ago. I found some interesting pictures here. There's always going to be people who will like to contest these things with us. But this is a picture of some very old art on the side of a rock, and I believe it's Natural Bridge National Monument out west. And you can see it's kind of faint, but up there in the top left you can see what appears to be the drawing of a man. And then down in the lower right-hand side, you see what everyone knows, you know, to be the big long-necked thing that you see in Jurassic Park, the Apatosaurus, with the big tail. And we'll look at this creature later. But to me, this is just fascinating. You know, people, they'll drill it in homeschool, or public school, not homeschool, they'll drill it to you, and, you know, the man and dinosaur separated by 65 million years. And yet we have men who are fascinated by these huge creatures drawing art of them on the side of the rock. I just think that's cool, you know. God's truth, you know, right there in front of you, tangible. This is an interesting little thing. This was in the book by Ken Ham. This is a quote by a couple of scientists here. I'll read it to you. Some of you may not be able to read it. This is at the University of Montana who made this discovery. It says, "A thin slice of T-Rex bone glowed amber beneath the lens of my microscope. The lab filled with murmurs of amazement, for I had focused on something inside the vessels that none of us had ever noticed before. Tiny round objects, translucent red with a dark center. Red blood cells? The shape and location suggested them, but blood cells are mostly water and couldn't possibly have stayed preserved in the 65-million-year-old Tyrannosaur. The bone sample that had us so excited came from a beautiful, nearly complete specimen of Tyrannosaurus rex unearthed in 1990. When the team brought the dinosaur into the lab, we noticed that some parts deep inside the long bone of the leg had not completely fossilized. So far, we think that all of this evidence supports the notion that our slices of T-Rex could contain preserved heme and hemoglobin fragments. But more work needs to be done before we are confident enough to come right out and say, yes, this T-Rex has blood compounds left in its tissue." Now this is just really cool to me. You think about finding something that old, you know, supposedly 65 million years at least old. They're saying, these are scientists who study these things all the time, they're saying that if it was really 65 million years old, it would all have mineralized. Every bit of it would be rock at this point. And yet that's not what they found. They found water still in the bone fragments of this fossilized Tyrannosaur. So we'll keep going. Why doesn't the Bible mention the word dinosaur? Does the Bible mention dinosaur anywhere in it? You know, can we find that anywhere? We have the fossils, but people think that science and the Bible contradict each other. So why don't we take a second and look? You know, maybe the Bible does mention dinosaurs, and we just haven't thought of it that way before. So we'll flip back over to Genesis chapter 1. This is on day 5. This is living creatures in the sea we're looking at here, but it's the same time frame. People lump the great sea monsters together with dinosaurs a lot of times. And we'll read Genesis 1:21 here. "So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good." So this word creatures, it's also translated as monsters or dragons in other places. That's this Hebrew word teni. You know, when you put the word monster or dragon, you know, it sounds a little bit more dinosaur-y, doesn't it? Sounds a little bit more, I see Dion laughing back there. He likes it. You know, sounds a little bit more ferocious, more monster movie like, doesn't it? When you put it that way. Let's flip over to Psalm 74. Psalm 74. Verse 13 beginning. You divided the sea by your strength. You broke the heads of the sea serpents in the waters. You broke the heads of Leviathan in pieces and gave him food as food to the people inhabiting the wilderness. We'll look at this creature Leviathan here in a minute. But when you look at this phrase, the sea serpents here, it says that God broke the heads of them. You know, when I think of serpent, I think of a little slithery thing on the ground that I try to go the other way from. I don't like snakes very much. But we're talking about something big here. We're talking about glorifying God. That's what he's doing here in this psalm. And, you know, when we're talking about the power and the might of God, why would he be talking about breaking the head of a little snake, you know, a little chicken snake or whatever that skewers your head? That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about something big, something scary to men, you know, something that would glorify God. Then let's look at Isaiah chapter 27. Isaiah 27, verse 1. In that day, the Lord, with a severe sword, great and strong, will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, Leviathan, that twisted serpent, and he will slay the reptile that is in the sea. When you read this, how can you not think of something like a dinosaur? The word dinosaur is a thing that we created, again, in 1841, but it comes from ancient Greek words, terrible and lizard. It means terrible lizard. And it's something we created. It's not a Greek word in and of itself. It's two Greek words that they mesh together to make that. You know, when you read this, how could this image not come into your head? I don't understand how people can read this and not think that. Now let's turn to the heavy hitters. We'll look at Job chapter 41. These are some of my favorite passages. When you're looking at faith builders. Job chapter 41. Talking about the Leviathan here. We'll start at verse 1. Just try and picture this creature in your head as we read through it, how big and how awesome this creature would have been. Can you draw out the Leviathan with a hook or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird, or will you leash him for one of your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the virgins? Can you fill his skin with harpoons, or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. Never do it again. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? Who has preceded me that I should pay him? Everything under heaven is mine. This is God here talking to Job out of what amounts to a tornado. You know, trying to show his might to Job. Now his point is, I created this thing, and you're scared of it. You know, it's God showing his might here. But look at the description. Now, I like verse 8. It says, lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. Never do it again. You know, sometimes we do stupid stuff when we're young, especially boys, I think. Somebody will dare you to go and do something. I dare you to touch it. You know, that's kind of what I have in my head when he's saying, you know, go touch the Leviathan. And you run away, right? Don't do that again. If you live, don't do that again. Will he speak softly to you? I think we have a little bit of God's humor coming out here as well. Will this big creature speak softly to you? This is something awesome. You know, this is something huge that man was afraid of. And notice that man was living alongside of. And God wouldn't describe something to Job that he'd never seen before, that he couldn't relate to. This is something Job knew about, something that he had seen or heard legend of at least, you know, that he was afraid of. I have this picture here. This is a dig site that they were working on. It's a photography site I came across. This is a 40-foot alligator crocodile, what have you. And they have these guys here laying out, off in the distance, kind of the outline for the picture, how big this thing is. And you see you've got five guys back. You know, that's the end of its tail. You see the head right there. And then you've got the guys laying out lengthwise to kind of give you a feel for how big this thing is. This is a 40-foot alligator. I would be going the opposite direction if I saw a 40-foot alligator. I tell you what. You know, when some people think that, some people call it the super croc. Some people think that this leviathan was the super croc. We'll go back to this picture. If you look up super croc online, you'll see pictures of the skull of this thing. And a grown man's head will fit just right in that nook where his lower jaw meets his head. Right there. That's, you know, you've got an extra 3 feet of jaw coming out the other side. So just to give you an idea of how big this thing is. Then we've got another creature that God describes here. Job chapter 40. Probably the same page. We'll begin in verse 15. Look now at the behemoth, which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox. See now his hip, and his strength is in his hips, and his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze, his ribs like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus tree in a covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare. The word behemoth here, and also the word leviathan, these are words that when they were translating the Bible, they had no English word for it. So they transliterated the word into behemoth. It's the same word, they just made it into an English word. They had nothing to describe this. They didn't know what to compare this thing to. When you look at the Jordan River gushing into this thing's mouth, he's unfazed by it. Whatever, you know how big the Jordan is. Now, this is a big creature we're talking about here. And once again, this is something that Job could relate to. He knew what this thing was. Some people will say that this creature, oh, it's just an elephant, or it's just a hippo, you know. But when you talk about a tail like a cedar tree, that's not it. Katie's laughing. When I first showed her this picture, she couldn't help it. But you know, that's not a cedar tree. This is a picture of an elephant backside, as you can tell. You know, this is not what we're talking about. Anybody who reads this passage honestly with themselves is going to know that. So we looked at, you know, where does the Bible mention dinosaurs? But we also have legends that we can look at to sort of solidify our thinking. Man lived with dinosaurs. Legends are nearly always based in fact of some kind, okay? That's just how legends become. Most cultures, ancient cultures, have some sort of flood legend. Now, wouldn't you know, they have the same legend that fits along with our biblical worldwide flood. Ancient Indians, Native Americans, they all had their own flood story. Well, the same is true with dragon legends. We have the story of Gilgamesh, Sumerian, about 2,000 years before Christ came along. That's when it was written. We have Gilgamesh, who is this big king, pride, you know, proud, big guy, heroic. He kills a huge dragon in that story. And so we have a mention of that dragon legend there. Alexander the Great, when he was conquering around, when he got to India, he found the Indians there worshiping big, you know, huge reptiles. You know, they're hissing in caves. You know, big reptiles in caves. And this was 330 BC. Not 65 million years ago. Not 6,000 years ago. This was 330 years before Christ. And then, of course, you have the Chinese dragon legends. I put a little picture up there. Again, it's visual aid. I hope it was worth it for all the trouble we had here a minute ago. But you have, the Chinese are known for their, the dragons. The year of the dragon, you see the people who get under the dragon costume and run around. They're known for their dragon legends. Why do you think that is? Well, where did that legend come from? And then this is actually in recorded history. This was May 13, 1572. There was an Italian peasant who killed, some kind of large lizard, a dragon. That's where the Arthur legends and everything come from. You have a peasant killing a dragon. This was 1572, about 500 years ago. So then, we looked at all this stuff. That's great, Jesse. Yeah, man, the dinosaurs. But why don't we see man fossils with dinosaur fossils? That's a fair question. When we're looking at scientific fact, why don't we see the two together? So first, we need to look at some fossil facts before we start jumping to conclusions. What do we have? What do we know about fossils? Well, 95% of all fossils are some kind of shallow marine organism, like corals and shellfish. That's 95% of all fossils that we found are those. Of that remaining 5%, you have most of that is algae and plants. You have 4.75% of all fossils are algae and plants. Not terribly remarkable, I guess, when we're looking at the thrilling dinosaurs. And then, of the remaining 0.2375%, those are invertebrates, so they have no spinal structure, no bone structure, like insects. And then finally, the remaining 0.0125% are vertebrates. Finally, we get down to creatures that have some sort of skeleton. And those are mostly fish. So we don't have that many dinosaur fossils to start with. We do have some, but most of them aren't even dinosaur fossils at all. It takes some kind of sudden burial for the fossils to happen like this. I put a picture up here of a fossilized skeleton, but I don't know if you've ever had anything die in the road or die in your yard or something, but as it decomposes, critters will come along and they'll be pulling pieces of it off and bones will get scattered here and there. You rarely find a complete skeleton. It's even some skeletons have to get buried rather suddenly before something can come along and disturb it. And especially something that still has all of its skin intact, It can't be sitting there very long. It has to be buried suddenly. So when we're thinking about what could have buried something that suddenly, I don't know how the flood could have come into your head, something catastrophic. So then we have to look at, when we're looking at fossils, how many people were there before the flood that could have been fossilized? And estimates are all over the place. We have, from a few hundred thousand up to 17 billion. That doesn't really narrow it down, does it? Some people have suggested that there weren't that many people, because if the world was really as wicked as God describes it to us, they wouldn't be fulfilling the command to be fruitful and multiply either. So they're, we really just don't know. We don't have a number. It's not in the scriptures for us. It's not in scientific fact. It's not recorded. We don't have it. Most likely, just like we live today, they would be living in small, dense clusters. Whether it be a community or a city, they're probably living together. All the bad stuff, all the big dinosaur creatures, they're going to be out somewhere else. They're going to be clustered up together for protection, to help each other. That's just how man operates. And then the question, would you want to live with a dinosaur? You're talking about the Leviathan, touch it and run away. I don't think that's even a question. However, we have this picture here. Me and John were discussing this a few weeks ago. This is a picture of a fossilized dino footprint with a fossilized man footprint. It's just something to give you pause for thought here. there are always people who will contest the authenticity of these things, but you know, they've x-rayed it, they looked at it, you know, but you can believe what you want to. It's kind of like how Joshua operated. You know, I'm going to believe what God says. We don't need these things, but it does help. So then we got to look at, you know, are we sure there's not even more dinosaurs out there? A lot of times you'll see scientists, they'll say, oh, this thing is extinct. Here, you see it in fossils, it's gone. There's no more of it. And then they'll go and find, like, let's say they found certain types of trees that they thought were extinct, and they had fossils of their leaves. They find the exact same trees in Australia still living. You know, they call those things living fossils. And most scientists are pretty embarrassed by them when they find it, you know, because they declared this thing to be non-existent. And how could you know? I mean, how could you, you know, at any one time know every creature that's living on the earth? We don't know. You know, man is the one that defined the word dinosaur to begin with. You know, we made this creature, we came up with this name and said, okay, all dinosaurs are extinct. Well, I challenge you, brother, how is an alligator that we have today in the zoo any different, just a smaller version of what we read about with the Leviathan? It's a reptile. I don't want to mess with it. You know, how is it any different? Most fossils that they find, they'll tell you the average dinosaur was about the size of a sheep. So, you know, from the floor, maybe about yay big. You know, not very big at all. So when we're talking about how large the earth is, it would be pretty easy for us to miss one somewhere in the jungles that have been undiscovered so far. And then, you know, maybe the environmental impacts limited the growth of some of the really big ones. You know, maybe the behemoths couldn't live like it used to before the flood. You know, maybe something about the flood changed the climate. It couldn't grow so big anymore, but we still have them somewhere. Maybe that's why we have alligators the size that they are now. You know, but they don't get any bigger. So at the outset, we talked about, you know, why does this matter? It's not exactly a typical Sunday morning sermon, I guess. And in that respect, I might have done something more than mine. It's more useful, I think. But some people make it a real deal breaker, you know, this belief in dinosaurs, because they think the two ideas are incompatible. And then you'll have Christians that compromise their belief in what, you know, what God says in the 6-day creation. They'll try and mix things together. They'll mix millions of years. Oh, he meant one day, that's millions of years, you know. One day is a thousand years. They'll try and compromise their faith in God because they want to fit with what they think science says is true. And this becomes a deal breaker to people. You know, they won't believe in what God says because of it. And, you know, for those who do believe it, it's good to know just to kind of, you know, so we know how to confront it. So just a few thoughts this morning. We didn't go over the plan of salvation or anything like that. But Daddy used to like his faith builder sermons, and I think maybe in some ways I've inherited some of that. I enjoy these faith builder sermons. Look at things and say, you know what, it doesn't have to be as grim as evolutionists. You know, and we don't have to feel beaten by that. So, if there's anything we can do for you this morning, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.